Mishnah. Mr. Itzke, we learned the din of Eidim Zaymimim. Eidim Zaymimim means if witnesses testify that someone owes money to someone else, and we're mazim them, we don't really know if it's, we don't know if they were telling the truth or not. We don't know if it happened or not. If we're mazim the first pair of witnesses, so we accept the testimony of the second, we give the punishment of kasha zamam. The Gemara has later a din on daf hey omer aleph, that is the premise of this whole, the assumption of this Mishnah. The Gemara has the following din. What happens? Two witnesses testify that Reuven broke Shimon's window and he owes him $150. And then when Mazin the Eidim, they weren't even there. But then another two witnesses come and they say it's taka true. They say it's true, he broke his window, but he didn't break his window 2 months ago, he just broke the window yesterday. But the Eidim came today. When the first pair of Eidim came, they came today. And they told the Baba Maisa that he broke the window 2 months ago. 2 months ago he hadn't yet broken the window. That's a lie. They weren't even there. Imanu Hayisa. We're mazim then. But the Gemara says that since at the time that they came to testify, it was true that Reuven owed Shimon $150 for breaking his window, so there's no punishment of Kasha Zama. Mm-hmm. What happens, let's say, if the first pair of witnesses testify that Reuven killed Shimon? We have a dead body, Shimon. We don't know who killed him, so the two witnesses come and they say, Reuven killed him on Sunday, we were there. And then the other two witnesses are mazim imanu hayisim. You weren't even there in that city. But another pair of witnesses come and they say, but it is true that he did kill him, and that we were there in that city, and he did kill him in that city. He did kill him in that city. So then
so
it
the
should
first aid is cancelled. So the second aid becomes the operative.
The first pair of witnesses testified falsely.
Right.
They were not there. We are mazin then.
Right.
But the question is, do we punish them with kasha zama?
Right.
Because if it's true that Reuven owes the money, if it is true that he owes the money, that it really happened, then the premise of the Mishnah, if the Gemara says the din is that there's no punishment of kasha zama, that's a chiddush. In the Chumash, it's hard to see that.
Yeah.
It doesn't really say that in the Chumash, but that's what the Gemara assumes, that there's no punishment of kasha zamam, even though it's true that they weren't there and they gave false testimony. But since halacha lemaisa, at the time that the first pair of witnesses testified, Reuven did owe the money because of that. Not because he owed the money because of a halvoah. No, he owed the money because Yitaka broke the window. So then there's no punishment of kasha zamam. But what happens, the Gemara says on Hamad Aleph, what happens if the two witnesses testify that Reuven killed Shimon and he deserves a death penalty and he killed him on Sunday in Florida, and the other witnesses say, Manu Hayisim, we were all together in Eretz Yisrael, you weren't even there in Florida, but another two witnesses come and they say, but he did kill him in Florida on Sunday. The first two witnesses weren't there, but Reuven did kill Shimon on Sunday. We were there in Florida. It is true, they heard it from us. The first two chevra heard it from us, they weren't there. So then it should also be the same thing, that since the truth of the matter is
there's a dead body and he killed him,
that he did, there is a dead body and he did kill him, we have witnesses, and he is chayv misa, so you shouldn't give the punishment of kasha zama. So the Gemara says no, that's different. If you break, Rabbi Kivega says over there, the famous Rabbi Kivega on the bottom of the page says, not like Rashi and Tosfos give up shot, and Rabbi Kivega, as well as the brother of the Ktzais HaChayshin, wrote a sefer Trumas HaKri on Chosha Mishpat. Now they print it in the back of the Sefer Ktzais HaChosha. So Rabbi Kivega and the Trumas HaKri, they're about the same time approximately. So they both say the same pshat in this Gemara, that when a person is Mechal Shabbos, or a person murders someone else, he's not Chayv Mis until Bezen Paskins, that there's a Gemara did. Or maybe in Knas is also the same thing. Knas could also be the same thing. Knas Heis Kefil, Dalad Vehei, whenever you pay Yosem Imashi Hizik, you pay Knas as opposed to Mammon. So until Bezna makes the Gemar Din, Rabbi Kivega and the Trumas HaKri both say there's no Chiyuv to pay any Knas. So at the time that the first pair of witnesses testified falsely that Reuven killed Shimon, or they testified falsely that he robbed the bank and he owes Karen and Kefil, and it turns out that he did rob the bank and he does owe the Karen, but he didn't yet owe the Kefil, as mevet machan agmar din, when the other two witnesses come and they'll test, their testimony will be accepted by the Bezdin, and the Bezdin will paskin that it's chayiv to pay, That's when the chiyuv to pay the kefil will come into existence. The chiyuv to pay back the keren, he robbed $1 million from the bank. That was talking there from last Sunday on. He robbed the bank. But the chiyuv to get the chiyuv misa for killing someone of a chil Shabbos, of a baal eishes ish, of the chiyuv kefil, the extra $1 million that you pay. When you rob a bank, you have to pay back the money that you stole. That's mammon, that's keren. Then you have to pay double if you did the gneiva and the gneiva as opposed to gzela. A ganef pays kefil and a gazlan does not pay kefil. So the ganef pays the extra kefil, the second, the double amount, that's knas. So knas, Rabbi Kiveger says that the chiyuv knas doesn't come into existence until a bezin makes a gemar din.
But it's just muslim.
No. The first pair of witnesses come and they say, Reuven robbed the bank $1 million last Sunday and we were watching him, he was in the middle of Manhattan, and he's chayiv to pay back $2 million. $1 million keren, $1 million kefil. The Edom come and they're mazin them, and these Edom came today, Tuesday, and they tell the story of what happened last Sunday. Another pair of witnesses come and they say, what kind of story? You weren't even in America. How can you tell what happened? So we're mazin them. Another two Edom come and say, I don't care where the first two witnesses were. We were there. He did rob the bank. He robbed the bank back last Sunday. The story is true. Time. Those guys were not there.
But Hazumah can only be after the Pesach Din.
Okay. So Bezin made a Gemar Din based on the testimony of the first witnesses.
Right.
And then we're Mazim there.
Was a Gemar Din.
Okay. So and the Bezin made a Gemar Din that he has to pay $2 million. $1 million
right.
That he stole, Karen. Right. And another additional $1 million kefil, the Karen with the kefil.
Right.
And then we're Mazim them, so we should make them pay the $2 million. But now another two witnesses come and they say, no, but he does owe $1 million. He does owe $2 million. He did rob the bank exactly as, except that they were lying. They weren't there. They heard the story from us. We told them the story with all the details and we convinced them that it happened. So they came and they testified. They wanted to get the credit. So they were ready to check it. So what's the din in such a case? So the Gemara says, the Karen that the ganef owed from the time that he robbed the bank, that's the Gemara Daf Hem and Aleph. The Karen, the $1 million that he owes the bank because he robbed their money, so that chiyuv did exist. Even though the witnesses don't come, the emistika witnesses who know that it really did happen,
later.
Don't come until later, doesn't matter. It's a gloy, Milson and Afreya. Turns out that he really did owe the $1 million. So the Edom Zaymimin don't have to pay for that $1 million, because the person against whom they gave false testimony,
turns
out he did owe that $1 million. But the extra $1 million of the kefil, even though the Geneva had already taken place a week and a half ago, the Geneva took place last Sunday, a week and a half ago, but there wasn't the chiyuv kefil yet. The chiyuv kefil doesn't come into existence until a bezin makes a gemar din. So since that, the Bezdin made a Gemar Din, a false Gemar Din, based on the witnesses that the ganef has to take care of the kefil. But then when we're mazim them, that Gemar Din is all ripped up.
Oh.
Now we're going to have to make another. Now the two emissary witnesses
That's
come,
good.
And they say it is true that he did rob. So we're going to make an emissary Gemar Din. So when we're going to make the emissary Gemar Din, is going to turn out the $1 million of keren he really owed from all along. So that the first Edom Zemimim don't have to pay. But the extra million of kefil, even though the story already had happened, the ganef did gamble, but the gemar din doesn't come till later, so that's the halacha that the Edom Zemimim do pay.
But by misa it doesn't work out.
And by misa is also like that.
Yeah,
even though the truth in the matter was he had Taki killed him.
Yeah.
Reuven did kill Shimon Taki 2 months ago. It is true. But since the Bezin didn't make a real emissary gemar din yet, we made a false gemar din originally based on the false Edom. And then we're mazim them, so you rip up that gemar din. Now the two true Edom come, the emissary Edom come, and now the Bezin makes an emissary gemar din. So the Pashup Shat, Rabbi Kiveger says he thinks that's Pashup Shat in the Gemara, and that's what the brother of the Ktzai Sacheshan also writes, the same independently. So then the Edom Zemimim do get the death penalty. Why? Because even though the man against whom they testified is taki guilty, but he wasn't yet chayiv misa. The chayiv misa doesn't set in until the bezin makes a gemar din.
The second gemar din, and then what about the second gemar din? You have a new set of edim.
We're going to make a gemar din. So the murderer is chayiv misa mikana lahabo.
Right.
You don't say it's a glory Muslim affair. He was chayiv misa from 2 months ago, from the day that he murdered him.
Oh.
No, by mumin when the bezin paskins he owes mumin. He says it's a glory of the Muslim affair. He owes the mum, and as of 2 months ago.
And the ganef has to pay kefil. No,
he doesn't pay kefil.
On the basis of the second gemara din.
The ganav will have to pay keren v'kefil. Yeah. That's correct. The ganav will have to pay keren v'kefil. The kefil money he got that. The kefil money he'll get back from the Adam Zayman.
Yeah.
Well, not the Kefil, the Kefil, the Matmechir. The Mammon, the Adam don't have to pay the Ganer. The Karen, they don't have to pay him because he really was already, turns out he really was Chayiv to pay the Karen. He was a Ganer.
And Isaac will wind up with more money. From the first cut of item, he will get the Karen. From the second cut of item, he will get Karen the Kefil.
No, he doesn't get more than.
No, he only collects one.
One.
No, the Nizik, the Nignav, let's say the bank. Yeah. The bank will get Karen the Kefil from the Ganav.
Yeah.
But the Ganav will collect Kefil from the Adam Zaymimim. Because he won't be able to collect the Karen from the Adam Zaymimim because he really was Mechuyif the Karen. It turns out he really was Mechuyif. But the Kefil he will collect because at the time that they testified, he wasn't yet Mechuyif. That's the Gemara.
In other words, the first, each time
that's not
the best.
Because they changed it.
They didn't change it.
The
information changes. Here the information changes.
They didn't change it.
It's a different case over there.
That's different.
It's a different case.
Why are Aiden Zayman punished? Whatever they want to do.
Yeah.
So they want him to pay Karen and Kefil. Therefore, they should, since he's not paying the Karen, why you talk to the bully? You're splitting it. You're splitting the punishment. In other words, the Karen they don't have to pay because.
The Karen they don't have to pay because the Ganef was looking for to pay.
It's a package deal.
So the Gemara says not a package deal.
Yeah.
This Mishnah that we're about to learn is going to tell us not a package deal. Not? Okay. So that's what our Mishnah is telling us here. This whole discussion in the Gemara on Daf Hey Amud Aleph is all based on this Mishnah on Gimel Amud Aleph, the first Mishnah on Gimel Amud Aleph. So the Mishnah has like this. Two witnesses come and they testify, Me'idamonu is Ishploni, Shigirish es Ishtoi, V'loi Nosan Lok Subosa. They testify that Reuben divorced his wife
and
he didn't pay her the Ksuba.
Can you testify? You didn't.
Right in the Raya.
He said, he just divorced his wife yesterday, and the wife said, what's going to be with Ksuba? So he says, don't worry, I'll pay you. So when the time comes, I'll pay. So they say, yeah, they know that he didn't pay the Ksuba. What does the wife say? What is the Ksuba? What is the Ksuba stam? What is the Ksuba? When you get married, so we have a practice, you give a document, a piece of paper to the Kala that says what rights and privileges, she has, what he owes her, what does Itaka owe her? So there are three parts. As a normal ksuba, it's important to know because the whole big machlokes harishonim, such a big literature on these three lines, such a shveri gemara, these three lines after the Mishnah. But just we should know what the words mean. There are three parts to any normal ksuba. When we get married, there are three parts to the ksuba. So there's the ike ksuba, tosefes ksuba, and the dunya. So the ike ksuba means if he's marrying a girl who's getting married for the first time, so she's entitled to masayim zuz. You got to say Masayim what? Masayim Zuz. How much is Masayim Zuz? So the Gemara says there are four Zuz in a shekel. So Masayim Zuz is 50 shkolim. That's Oynes and Mefata is 50 shkolim. It says in the Chumash, if someone is Ma'anis or Mefata a girl, it says Kesef Yishkol Kimohar Habisulos. He has to pay 50 shkolim. If that was the amount of money that they used to give Bisman Matan Torah, that was the practice. That a girl who's going to marry for the first time gets a ksuba of chamishim shekel kesef. Either it's a din, a ksuba is deraisa, it's a din, or that was the minik. That's a machlokes satanaim. Is ksuba deraisa? The Chumash is saying that every boy who marries a girl who's getting married for the first time, he's mechuyif to pay her the ksuba if he, in the event that he divorces her, in the event that he dies first, so she's entitled min haTorah to collect ksuba. Ksuba is deraisa. Or we paskin like the other Tanaim that Ksuba is lav deraisa. That was the practice. That was the meaning. Bisman Batan Torah. That by the Goyim, by the Eden, everybody used to take Ksuba. But it's not din. It's not really required. It's only required midirabbanim. But the Chumash says that because he was ma'anis and mafata the girl, whoever she's going to marry later on, she's not going to be a psula anymore, so he's not going to give her this chamishim shekel kesef ksuba. So the fact that I was ma'anis and mafata her, I mafsid her the ksuba. So yeah, that's why kesef yishkel kemara habesuba. No, you pay the full.
No, that means she has a.
Oh, that's the next step. That's the next step.
So there's only.
No, that for sure is only the rabbanon. If the woman was married previously, she now an almana or a grusha, so then the ksuba for sure is only the rabbanon. Ksuba almana grusha for sure is only the rabbanon, and instead of being masayim.
So why should she get 200? The Torah gives her 200 because that's her loss.
No, but Bizman Matan Torah they didn't have that. They had either 50 shkolim or nothing. The meyazuz that you give a ksuba meyazuz to an almana or to a grusha, that's only later. That's Bizman Atanaim, that's the takana de rabban. But Bizman Matan Torah that was neither the minig nor the din. That's luchala days now. That's only the rabban. So Bizman Matan Torah they only had either they had a din or they had a minig, either one or the other. The Chumash records it. Kesef Yishkol Kimohar Habasulas. There is such an institution as Mohar. So the Mohar is what we call Ksuba. Ksuba is the 50 shkola. 50 shkola, same thing as 200 zuz, because there are 4 zuzim in every shekel. So the that's called the Ika Ksuba, the basic amount. And that says in the Mishnah that even if the chasim doesn't give any piece of paper to the kala at all, it doesn't matter. That's a tanai bezin. That's a takonas hachachamim. We paskin it's a tanai bezin. The other tana holds that it's a din deraisa. And some rishonim paskin that ksuba is deraisa. But the rov harishonim paskin like the tanoim, like the rov hatanoim, the ksuba is lav deraisa. There's no ksuba that's deraisa. Not only the almana, the 100 zuz of the almana is the rabbanon, even the Ike ksuba of the besula, girls getting married for the first time, it's also only with the rabbanon. The ksuba is only with the rabbanon. But then that's the Ike ksuba, the mono masayim, either the 100 zuz or the 200 zuz that you give the grusha or the besula, that's called the Ike ksuba. And that you have to give even if you didn't hand over any document at all. But then the other two parts of every standard ksuba are only there if he writes it down, if they make a Kabbalah's Kinyan and they make a Hischaivis. If you don't give a ksuba, so there's not. So Tosefes ksuba. We have a minig that we add on $15,000 just because the ksuba is so there. It's so little. So if you want, you can add on $100,000. If you want, you can add on $100 million, whatever, depending on how wealthy you are. In the days of the Maharil, in the 1400s, when they instituted the text of the ksuba that we have, so they added on German coins, 100 zakukin kesef tsaruf. This has nothing to do with 100 zuz. 100 zuz, when you say 100 zuz or 200 zuz, yeah. When you say, mona masayim, 100 or 200, you have to say 100 or 200 what? 100 or 200 is zuzim. That's very little money. That's very little money. And the 100 zakukin kesef tsaruf, That's a lot of money. That's $10,000-$15,000. So that's in the days of the Maharil. That was such an exaggeration. No one had that. That was for the millionaires. And everybody wrote down, we're adding on a Tosefes Ksuba of 100 Zukukin, Kesef Tzav Zukukin with German coins. That was a guzman. Today it's also peanuts. What's $15,000? Not so much money. Not so much money at all. The whole idea of the Ika Ksuba is. That if he divorces his wife, she should have money to last for a year, to survive for a year until she'll find a shidduch. We hope. Now, yeah, how? What? Even with the $30,000, who says she's going to survive even a year? And the $30,000, that's not the ikik ksuba, that's the tosefes ksuba. The ikik ksuba is mamish $250. Who can live for a year on $250? Mamish peanuts. The garnish min garnish, very little. Same thing. In the Mishnayis and Ksubas, they have that Kohanim, when they used to make a big shidduch, they used to add on more than everybody else. They used to exaggerate. Sometimes in the Shtiblach, when they auction off the aliyahs, so they add zeros. They say 100. They say 100. They mean 100 pennies. They don't mean $100. It sounds good. Huh?
Redeemable after
Shabbos. Yeah, so that's what the Mishnah has in Ksuba, is that sometimes by the Kohanim, when he used to get married, so he used to multiply by 10 or multiply by 100. So whatever it says in the Ksuba, if you come to collect it, everybody knows you divide it by 10 or you divide it by 100, because it doesn't mean what it says. And sometimes they did give more, sometimes they gave more, they meant more, because it was a bigger shidduch. A more knackendick.
400.
Yeah, a bigger
so
shit.
How do you know when it's only.
Depends on the Minigamokim. Every star is interpreted according to the language of the Minigamokim. So if the Minigamokim is you speak in Guzmois, and everything is multiplied by 10, so when it's time to collect it, so you divide it by 10. Yeah. So the halacha says there are three parts. In all of Aksubas, there are three parts. You have the Iker Ksuba, which is either mona or masayim, 100 or 200 zuzim, which is very little. 100, 200 zuzim, if the girl's getting married for the first time, 200 zuzim is 50 shkolim. 50 shkolim is zeh vintzik. How much is pigyon haben? 5 shkolim. So 50 shkolim is 10 times pigyon haben. How much do you give for pigyon haben? The biggest macharim gives $25 for pigyon haben. Pigyon haben is the value of 96 grams of pure silver. That's the Iker Adin. 96 grams. In a minute. That's L'chol HaYeser. L'chol HaYeser. The most it can be for Pigyon HaBen is $25. The minute is, instead of giving 96, they give 100 grams of pure silver. So that's not.
Grams of, a silver coin has more than 100 grams.
Pure silver
is now $6 an ounce. So 104 ounces, so about $20, yeah, about that, right.
The chumer, the biggest machmirin, give $25. Right. That's way above. So let's make believe that pigyon haben would be 25. L'chumer, l'chumer, shebechumer, $25. So the ksuba is going to be $250, because the ikke ksuba is only 10 times pigyon haben, 50 shkolim. That's the whole story. It's a very humorous cheshbon, but it's not correct.
It's a boom spiel.
Remember when I told it over to Rabbi Aaron Soloveitchik, he almost fell on the floor. When I told over this cheshbon about Chad Gadya, about how much the goat sell for next to the Kosel Maravi, Rabbi Aaron Soloveitchik almost fell on the floor about 15 years ago. It's not correct. It's a late
but the way you explained the Mohar, it's an actual loss. So why is it a knas?
Because it's an amount that's kavua. It's whenever the Torah is mechayel,
the person gives.
Who says she's ever going to get a shidduch?
That's another thing.
Yeah. Okay.
In the meantime, shidduch.
Yeah. So the ikur.
It's very
expensive. The exact amount. Yeah. If it would be that every single girl is losing that amount of money, so that it is a hezek. But we don't know if the girl's ever going to get married. So that's why we consider a knas.
Okay.
So again, so the Iker Ksuba is 50 shkolim, which is L'chol HaYeser, $250, that's L'chumra. And then you have, in addition to the Iker Ksuba, we write down Tosefes Ksuba, which the minig is, since the days of the Maharil, we write down for a girl's getting married for the first time, you write 100 100 Zekukin Kesef Tzorev, which are German coins, that's already worth $10,000-$15,000. And then you also assess what we call nedunya. The day nedunya danolaslei, that's what the Gemara calls nichse tzarim barzel. When the girl gets married, so she comes with jewelry and with dresses and with sheets, and sometimes she has an automobile, and she has sometimes the parents buy furniture for her, and all kinds of, sometimes they buy an apartment and buy it begun, whatever they bought for the girl. So we have to assess how much everything is worth, and the husband is supposed to accept the responsibility that in the event that they get divorced or he dies, he has to give it back the value of everything. Even though the parents gave clothing and they're married for 50 years and those clothing are gone a long time ago, many generations ago those clothing are gone, but that's why it's called Nichse Tzoyim Barzel. Behemoths die and then they disappear. But Tzoyim Barzel, metal behemoths, don't disappear. So the halacha considers all the nedunya that the girl brings into the marriage, all the property that she brings into the marriage, that the chosn accepts upon himself the responsibility. If he doesn't accept the responsibility, isn't it? It doesn't become nechset zon barzel. But if he accepts the responsibility, then even though the clothing is long gone and everything, all the behemoths that she had died already, but still he has to pay her back the full value of everything. So how much is it worth? In each case, you have to assess how much is it worth. If the parents are wealthier, or if the girl was single for many years and she had a job and she put away all the money in a bank account, so there's a lot more money that she's bringing into the marriage. And if she's a young girl and parents have no money, so there's very little money. So $10 worth of dresses and underwear that she's bringing into the marriage, not worth too much. So the minute was, in the days of the Maharil, they had nothing. The Jews never had so much money. So he used to write a guzma, assessing everything that she brings into the marriage as being worth 100 zakukin kesef tsarf, 100 of these German coins, which is approximately today between $10,000 and $15,000. Today, a lot of times that's underestimated. A lot of times the girl's parents give the girl brings into the marriage more than $15,000. Much more than $15,000. So that's a problem, why we still have this practice. In the days of Maril, they wrote these numbers, 100 zakukin kesef tsarf tosefes, and 100 zakukin kesef tsarf sachakol, 200 zakukin kesef tsarf sachakol, 200 zakukin. So this was written as a guzma, tremendous, way more. And today it's often much less than it should be. Anyway, so these are the three parts of the ksuv. Fine. So whenever a man divorces his wife, or whenever the husband dies before the wife, so the wife is entitled to collect the entire ksuba, the ikka ksuba, the tesefes ksuba, with the nedunya, whatever it says in the ksuba, the three parts of the ksuba. What happens if the wife dies before the husband? So there's no, so she's not problem. Entitled to collect any ksuba. Okay.
It goes to him.
Sometimes there's a din in the Mishnah of benin dichrin, yeah. That after let's say if after that wife, his first wife died and he had sons and daughters, he had a whole bunch of children from her. Now he marries a different wife and he has children from her. And then ultimately the father dies. No one lives forever. Ultimately the father is going to die. So if you're going to divide up all of the Yerusha equally among all of the children, so it's not going to be so fair, because let's say one father-in-law gave a fortune of money to his daughter when she got married. The other father-in-law didn't give anything. One could afford more than the other one. So now that father-in-law's money is going to be going to the other children who are not his grandchildren. Yeah. So that's not fair. So people are going to be discouraged from giving large nedunyas to the daughters when they get married. So the tanoi made a takana in order to continue to encourage those who can afford to help out their children when they get married. Kadesh itin lebito kimono. They always used to give to the sons. And they're afraid to give to the daughters because the daughters used to die at childbirth. So if they're going to give to the daughter, she may die, and then the money may go to someone else, to some other children. So in order to continue to encourage them, kedeshiyitin lebino, lebito kibino, so they made a takana that's called ksubas benin dichrin, that when ultimately the father is going to die, so when he dies, the amount of the nedunya that the girl brought into the marriage, that goes to her benin dichrin, to her sons, before you divide the rest of the Yerusha. And the amount that the other wife brought into the marriage, her nedunya, goes to her sons. And now we're going to divide the rest of the Yerusha. So none of the fathers of the girls will feel bad about giving money to their daughters. The money ultimately will end up in the family. It'll end up by their grandchildren, if they have grandsons. If they have granddaughters, isn't it? So that's a takana of benin dichrin. And the Rosh quotes the Gaonim that we no longer observe the benin dichrin today, and that's a whole discussion. Why not? What happened to the benin dichrin? He says that the takana fell apart.
But the Purim is going to get the same double
amount. The Purim is supposed to, if you have a Pchor, my first two children are daughters. I don't have any Pchor. Pchor is if it's the firstborn child is a boy. The Pchor is entitled to a double portion. I have three sons. So my first son happens to be my third child. If my first son would have been my first child, so I would act as if I have four sons, and the Pchor would be entitled to two portions. If I have 10 sons, and the first child is the son, so instead of dividing the Yerusha in 10 portions, you divide in 11 portions, and it gets 2/11. That's what it means, Pishnayim. That's it. If the son was the firstborn, then he's entitled to Pishnayim. Yeah. So now the Mishnah has this case.
Apart from the father, not from the mother.
Yeah. But Pidyon HaBen, that's how the Mishnah says. But Pidyon HaBen purposes, it depends, is it the firstborn from this mother? Is it Peter Rechemana? But for Bechor, getting Pishnayim, it depends if it's the father. Let's say the woman was married previously, and she had a few children from the first marriage. And the husband dies, or they get divorced, whatever, and then the woman remarries this man, and this is the first child that he has. It's her sixth child. A boy, but it's his first boy.
Oh, yeah.
So that child, there's no pidyon HaBen, because not a peter rechem. He's child number six to the mother, but that child is my first son. So that child gets pishnayim. Yeah, that child gets a double portion. That's what the Mishnah points out, that Yesh Pchola Nachla Beinam Pchola Pidyon, Yesh Pchola Pidyon Beinam Pchola Nachla, that the definition of Pchor for Pidyon Aben purposes is not the same as the definition of Pchor for Pishnai. So here the Mishnah has such a case. The husband and the wife are here. They were always married for years. And all of a sudden the wife says, he divorced me and he owes me the ksuba and he didn't pay any ksuba. And the husband says, not true, we're still married. What do you mean I divorced? I don't owe you anything. Go cook my supper. I want supper. What kind of divorce? And she says, no, you divorced me and you didn't pay me the ksuba. I want to collect my ksuba. So she brings two witnesses and witnesses, yes, she's telling the truth. He just divorced her. And we know that he didn't pay ksuba. He just told us today. He just told us he didn't pay the ksuba yet. He doesn't have any money. And he says he's going to pay it out. So the Bezin makes a gemar din. He has to pay. They look, where's the ksuba? She pulls out a ksuba. And they look in. How much does it say? 200 zuz for the ike ksuba. And 100 zukuk and kesef tsar for the tosefes. And 100 zukuk and kesef tsar for the nedunya. Sach hakol. And they make a gemar din. He has to pay. And then they come and they're mazim the yedim, and the whole thing is sheker v'chazal. The whole thing is sheker v'chazal, but not exactly. The Mishnah raises the issue.
She makes herself not be mutter to him anymore, no, because she asks herself to this husband. The woman who says also that she is divorced,
yeah,
and now so, you're mazim the yedim,
yeah,
so she's not allowed. Is she allowed to live still with this?
Yeah, it comes out that it's a lie.
Right.
We're mazim the first pair of Adam, and then let's say
but
then she admits.
But she says
no, it. Then she admits that it was a lie. She just had to get the money.
Yeah.
That's what the Rishonim asked. We have at least in the days of the Gemara, if the woman says in the presence of her husband, Gerashtani, so the Gemara says you believe her. So the Rishonim say that based on the Gemara that that's only. Because the woman would never have the chutzpah to say in the presence of the husband Gerashtani.
Right.
So the Rishonim say based on the Gemara, but if she comes supported by two witnesses, then she will have the chutzpah to say. So here she comes supported by two witnesses, and then we're mazim the witnesses.
Yeah.
So she built up a whole case. She together, on her own, she wouldn't say Gerashtani. That's a shaila in Shulchan Aruch, whether that chazok is still applies bizman hazeh. That a woman says in the presence of her husband, Gerashtani, that she's an amen is because a woman would never have so much chutzpah to say. A woman wouldn't have chutzpah, what? The women are so timid
today.
But the Ramah is talking in the 1500s, and he's quoting the Haggadah Maimoni, that's from the 1200s.
Why would she be believed if he says no? I never divorced you, right?
Yeah.
It's one against one.
Right. So that's what the Gemara says. It's a ruba de leisa kamon chazok. It means a ruba de leisa kamon ein ish and miza pana b'fnei baila. A woman would never have so much good but to say in the presence of a husband a lie that she's not married to him. So the Ramah says, why not? We live in different times. And it's just not so.
The Ramah already says that.
No, the Ramah who lived in the 1500s quotes the Agos Maimoni who lived in the 1200s. Who says so like this? That they're not so convinced that the chazaka still applies this man.
Even Pninim, you have it for Rabbi Soloveitchik and the Pninim.
Yeah, yeah.
Bring to Rav from Khrushchev.
From Khrushchev, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. He said he doesn't know the chazaka of Milta David Leglui Loi Meshakri Inshi. The Gemara has a din that if you have a case where you need two witnesses. And one witness comes and he says something. You need two kosher witnesses up in there. One person says, but he can get caught red-handed in the lie. If he's telling a lie, we're going to find out in the next week. We're going to find out. The guy's going to be dead embarrassed. So we assume no one would want to tell a lie if he can be caught red-handed in the lie. So you have the right to rely on what he said. So Rav Soloveitchik said he's not so convinced that thing still applies bizman hazeh. So this happened right after Khrushchev was in the United Nations with Nixon, I
Cuba.
Think. No?
Cuba. Cuba missiles.
So he said, yeah. Eisenhower was that?
No.
I don't know. So I forgot who it was. So he asked him, do you have missiles in Cuba? And he said, no. So Tech de Diva, they showed the photographs of the missile. So garnish. Negate weiter. He wasn't embarrassed. In front of the whole world. It was on TV in front of the whole world. He told the lie. That's in modern times, everybody, all the big world politicians, they tell such big lies, and everybody knows that it's a lie. And no one is embarrassed. That's what Rav Soloveitchik said. He's not so convinced that halacha of. No, this one. That people will never tell a lie, and therefore it's a ruba d'leis that come on that he's telling the truth. He's not so convinced that that still applies bisman hazeh, like the Rambam says over here in the name of the Agos Maimonides. He's not so convinced that this chazaka of ein isha misa paneb ifnei baila still applies. So Nachman, so what's this story over here? You have a couple; they were always married for years, and now the wife says the husband divorced me. And he didn't pay the ksuba yet. The husband says, not true, you're still married and I want you to make supper. And she says, no, I'm free, I'm not married anymore, and you owe me the ksuba. And then she brings two witnesses and they testify, yes, the husband divorced her last week in the bedroom, showing on the east side, he divorced her, and he said he didn't pay the ksuba. And he didn't pay the ksuba yet. So your mazim, if your mazim, the witnesses, so you should make them pay kasha zaman. So the Mishnah says, but just a minute, everybody who gets married does obligate himself to give the wife a ksuba. The only thing is, it's not yet collectible. But what will happen in the event that he does divorce her? Sometimes people do get divorced. Sometimes they don't. The husband and the wife don't always die
the
b'nishim achas. Somebody dies before the other one. So once in a while, the husband will die before the wife. Usually, bizman ha'gemara, the wife would die at childbirth, so it was common that women died before the husband. So let's say the husband is 10, 15 years older than the wife. So they may die at the same time. You don't know, the husband may die before the wife. You don't know what's going
to
be.
So
what will happen in the event that the husband will divorce his wife later? Obviously, there isn't so much shalom bais. If she says in the presence of the husband,
he divorced her
and she brought Adam and your mazim, this is a real crackpot over here. So the husband is not going to be so happy maintaining such a marriage with such a wife. So he may yet divorce her in the future. Or he may get a heart attack from her shtick and he may yet die before her, in which case she will be entitled to collect the ksuba. If she is responsible for his heart attack, if she's responsible for breaking up the marriage, then the Mishnah says in ksuba she does not collect the ksuba. That's the Mishnah in ksuba, is not fine base. Let's say you ascertain that she's always cursing the husband, or let's say you ascertain she doesn't want to go to mikveh, she makes it impossible to have a normal marriage, or she doesn't want to cook any food, whatever, she doesn't want to make meals, or she's giving him tray for food. We ascertain that she's been giving him tray for food all along. He's a religious man. It depends. If they got married on the understanding they're not going to be religious, so that's not grounds for divorce. But if they got married on the understanding that he is religious, and then she was fooling him, and she was giving him non-kosher food, or they were living together, and she wasn't going to the mikveh, and she never told him, so then he has no choice. He has to divorce her. So then it comes out, if she was responsible for ruining the marriage, or she gives him a heart attack. She gives him a heart attack, and he dies. And she was the one who was responsible for ruining the marriage. So then she's not entitled to the ksuba. But whenever we can't fault the wife for ruining the marriage, it's no one's fault. Either it's the husband's fault for ruining the marriage, or it's no one's fault. You can't fault anybody.
What about the Tzunin and Tzun Basel that she does get?
No, whenever it's her fault for ruining the marriage, then she loses everything.
The whole
But whenever it's not her fault, then she's entitled to the ksuba. So let's say when she is entitled to collect the ksuba. Let's say a case, the husband divorced his wife, and she is entitled, no one's fault, not her fault, not his fault, it just didn't work out for whatever reason. So the wife is entitled to collect the full ksuba. Let's say the husband was in business the last 25 years. He had a lot of real estate at the time that he got married. When he gave her the ksuba under the chuppah, he had a lot of real estate. He sold it, he bought, he sold, he bought, he sold, he bought. Now, the time he divorced his wife, he has no assets at all. So the din says, he wrote in the ksuba, he's meshabed, he's putting a lien on all of the property that he has at present. Udo'osir an olamikne, nechassin dis. And the property that I will buy in the future. So all the property that he sold in the last 24 years of marriage, everything in Meshubit. So the wife has a right to go to the Lukuchas, those who bought these fields, the property, and to collect. And to collect. So whoever has the real estate, the wife has a right to go collect from them because of the ksuba that she has. It could be that they have more of a right to keep it. So yeah, you have to figure out their mishnayis. Who has more of a right to keep it? Okay, you got to figure that out. But the wife has a right to go collect the karkois also. So she has a right to collect the karkois that were meshubat from the time they got married. But he didn't divorce her until 25 years later. So the answer is, the right to collect is after she gets divorced. But the chiyuv is at the time that they get married. When he gives her the ksuba, the document under the chuppah, he's already mekabel to his chayvus. The chiyuv already exists. The only thing is, it's a chiyuv that he may never have to pay off, and he may have to pay off in another 65 years when he'll get divorced or when he'll die before her. And now the Adam Zaymimim are saying that he has to pay it already today. So there's a big difference between paying, let's say the whole amount of the ksuba is $30,000. Let's say that's the biggest amount that any bezin makes you pay now. The way we write ksuba is $30,000, not so much. So what would be the din? Let's say take a look at the next mishnah. The next mishnah, same as this mishnah. Witnesses come and testify that Reuven borrowed $100,000 for Shimon, and he has to pay it up in 30 days. And Reuven says, it's true that I borrowed the money, but the agreement was 10 years, not 30 days. A big difference between 10 years and 30 days. If I have the money for 10 years, I can invest and I can make millions and billions, and then I'll pay him back his $100,000 at the end of the 10 years. I have to give it back in 30 days. What can you do already in 30 days? But it's Taka Emes that he admits that he owes the money. He says, it's Emes that I owed $100,000. But I don't owe. And then we're mazim the first pair of witnesses. Turns out that they told a lie. Half of the story was true, half of the story was a lie. Half of the story was true, he does owe $100,000. But the other half was a lie. He doesn't owe it collectible 30 days.
Pay back.
He has 10 years to pay back. So when the Edim Zaymimim have to pay the differential, they don't pay the full $100,000. That's what the Gemara says later. That's based on these Mishnayos. Because even though they told a lie, Iman Hayisim, they weren't even on the continent. They were in a different part of the world. They were on the moon. They were walking on the moon on that day that they claimed the halvoah occurred. But since Lemaisa, he really does owe that amount of money, so the amount of money that he really does owe, that they were trying to be mafsid him, there's no punishment of Kasher Zama. But the amount that they were trying to mafsid him, more, they were trying to make him pay the $100,000 within 30 days. And really, truth of the matter is, he has 10 years, so that's worth a lot of money. So that's how much they
pay. How do you judge that?
So there are people who can.
You go according to banking. He can say, I could have bought stocks and become a millionaire.
You make a shuma. So that's what the next Mishnah says. So the Rishonim, the Rosh, and the other Rishonim say that this Mishnah is exactly the same. The husband, the wife says, you divorced me and you got to pay. It's collectible already now. The husband says, I didn't divorce you yet. If you keep on dagging near the yoren, I will divorce you. If you keep on giving me a hard time, you're going to ruin the marriage, and we're going to see. She says it's his fault. He says her fault. It's hard to ascertain whose fault it is. So he may yet divorce her, or he's turning gray from aggravation over this marriage. So he may yet die. He may yet die before the wife. So she may yet collect. So this is the same kind of a problem. He really does owe her the ksuba.
It's not exactly, because here by the loiver, he eventually will have to pay back, definitely.
In the second Mishnah, he definitely will collect, just a matter of time. So the Mishnah, so you can dig as a shtark, but that's what the Tanoim say. But hello, the Mishnah says, let's go again, this Mishnah. The first Mishnah, Amdav Gimel Amanal. The two witnesses testify in support of the wife's version of the story, which is a lie. That's not true. He said, the wife is telling the truth. She givish his ishtoi. So he just told us that he divorced his wife. And then we're mazim them and it comes out it's a lie. But the Mishnah says there's a problem. Halo bein ayom bein lamocha. Today, tomorrow, next week. Sofa litin laksuba. Ultimately, it may be. It's not about those, but it may turn out
that he is
going to have to pay the ksuba. And if it turns out he has to pay the ksuba, he doesn't only pay the ksuba mikan alahabo. No, all the karkois amishubid mila mafreya. From the time that he gave it the ksuba under the chuppah, the chiv was there all along. So whatever is taka true chiv that was there all along, the Edim Zemimim don't pay for that, even though they were lying through their teeth. We were mazim them; they weren't there. But we ascertained that part of the story was true. So even though they gave Edim Sheker, they don't get the punishment. But they're trying to make him pay now, and now for sure it's not true. Now he doesn't have to pay the ksuba now because they're really still married. So they only have to pay the differential. So the Mishnah says, Omdin, we have to shut up. You have to make an assessment. How much is it worth? How much would a person want to pay? If the husband dies or the husband divorces her, the wife will collect the ksuba. However, but if the wife dies before the husband, then you're a shana bila, then the husband doesn't pay.
It's like if she sells ksuba, you own it.
Okay, right.
No, a gamble.
Yeah.
Well, sometimes not. Sometimes you don't collect.
It's like when a woman wants, before she gets, she has a ksuba and she wants to get some money, so she knows the individual, and she says, this is due me.
Yeah.
And you take your chances, but if someday it'll be worth it.
She discounts. She went for this.
Okay.
Same thing.
Okay. Good. Okay.
Where does it get? A mistake.
No. The witness, the wife says the husband divorced me. The husband's screaming, I didn't divorce you. The wife says, you divorced me, you didn't pay the ksuba. And then she hired Eide Sheker, and they get, she lost the get. She doesn't have the get.
Oh, she does.
Yeah. That's what she says. The husband says, there's no, there was no get. But there may yet be a get. If they're going to continue like this, there will be a get. Or he's going to die sooner or later. So the Mishnah says, since Ben Kovako, he already does owe her the money. It's just a question of time, but it's not exactly the same. It may turn out that they won't be collected at all. But still, the Gemara says, since there's a possibility she may yet collect, so the Eidim Zanimim, even though they gave false testimony, 100% false testimony, they were just not there, they don't pay the full Kasha Zomam. To a certain extent, the chiyuv does exist and they don't pay. So you have to calculate. So the Gemara asks, Ketzat Shomim, what does the Mishnah mean? How in the world are you supposed to make the calculation? What do you mean the differential? A little bit they don't pay, and a little bit they do pay. What's the calculation?
But the Mishnah says, come with them right at the time. So the speculation.
So the Gemara says, but there are two ways to make the calculation. Machlokes Rav Chisda and Rav Nosson Bar Roshia. So Rav Chisda says the calculation is made babal. Daino means like this.
Longevity.
If the husband, a big machlokes. How to read these three lines in the Gemara? So Rashi has a pshat on the bottom of the page that he doesn't like. He says two lines from the bottom. He heard this from has a totally different pshat that nobody likes. The Rif quotes one of the Goyim, and Ananim Chazina LeGoyim, he quotes the Goyim. The Goyim's pshat is very, very sure. We don't know what he's talking about. And every one of the Rishonim has another version over here. So we'll learn Rashi's pshat. Rashi's is the most popular pshat over here, the easiest pshat. So Rashi says like this. When the witnesses testify that he has to pay the ksuba, he has to pay the full $30,000. They made Bez Medik Mardin. He has to pay $30,000 today. But then, when we're mazim the Edim, and it turns out that it's not true, so exactly how much would they mafsid the husband? How much would they mafsid the husband? They'll mafsid him $30,000. No, there's a possibility that
he may not have to pay at all.
He may not have to pay anything, so they mafsid the full $30,000. That the Gemara din was, it may turn out that he will have to pay later. So any husband at any given time, any happily married husband
will be willing to buy back the ksuba.
Any husband has the opportunity of selling the rights to the ksuba. Let's say when he got married, he wrote down $30,000 on it, the ikka ksuba, the sefes ksuba, the dunya, everything altogether $30,000, and he designates a certain field. In the event that I divorce you or that I die, you should have the right to collect the $30,000 from this hotel or from this factory or from this field, whatever, a specific asset. Now what, they're happily married, 35 years later, the husband wants to sell that
field.
So how much would that field be worth? But the guy who buys it, the lekech, knows quite well
he may lose it.
It may be taken away from him. Yeah. So there's a chance that he may, and let's say that field is worth $30,000. The wife is not going to take it away because it's worth more than $30,000. It's only
Meshuvah.
So the one who buys it is not going to pay $30,000. So the husband, any husband at any point in the marriage has the ability to sell that field that's designated as
the
for a certain amount of money. No Meshuggah is going to pay the full $30,000. He's going to pay much less. He's going to pay less, probably less than $15,000 also.
It's the same way as she would sell the Ksuba.
Not exactly, because the husband uses the field the whole time and he's entitled to the payrus. So the field may or may not be taken away from the wife. So you have to ascertain how old is the husband, how old is the wife. How sick is the husband? You have to ask an actuary. Who do you think is going to die first? Is there shalom bayis? Does it look like they're going to get divorced first, or they're going to, or someone's going to die first? So that's
the
what the Rishonim say. You take all these into consideration.
And the mission is turning Ksuba into an item of speculation. So the same way the mission says that the issue might want to sell her privileges, maybe he wants to sell his obligations. This is a babal.
His obligations?
Yes. Somebody will take it over from him on the idea, with the idea that either in the end he will have to pay out, or in the end
he
will get off
scot
free. So this is also an item of speculation from the side of the babal.
Not from the side of the babal.
But no one's going to pay money. No one's going to pay money to the husband. The husband will pay money to someone else. I want to take insurance.
Yeah.
The husband can take out insurance on a gamble. I want to buy insurance from you. You have an insurance company.
Yeah, okay.
So I say, I may or may not have to take suva to my wife, depending. Yeah, that's a different thing. The husband may not take out insurance. That's a different thing. We're trying to figure out what are the Eidim maps to the husband. So what did the husband have before they gave Eid Sheker, and what does he have now? So now, after they gave Eid Sheker, and the Beit Medik Gemar, then he has nothing. They just took away the $30,000 field that he designated in Ishtar. He has nothing. But even before the
item came,
Eid Sheker came, what did he have? He had, he owned $30,000 worth of a field.
Nobody,
if he were to
that.
Sell it, how much would someone pay? They wouldn't pay $30,000 because they know it may be taken away because there is a lien on it. So they have to calculate how old is he, how old is she, who's sicker, is the shalom bayis or not. They have to take all these into consideration. So Rav Chisda says, even though in the Mishnah it says, Omdim you assess, Kama Odom Rotzalitim Big Subasa Shel Zu, how much would someone want to pay to buy her Ksuba? It sounds like the wife is selling the rights to collecting the Ksuba. So Rav Chisda says it doesn't mean that. It means how much would someone want to pay the husband to buy the field that he designated for the Ksuba? How much would they want to pay?
Why is it different?
Not the Ksuba.
They come and say, you won't move in $30,000.
Yeah.
So you have to pay the
30 euros. They pay $30,000.
So here, the same thing here. It's a shtar. Ksuba is like a shtar hole.
Yeah.
So I have obligated myself to pay $30,000. Come agent and say you have to pay it.
Yeah.
So they want me to pay $30,000, which it really doesn't come to her.
Rashi says why.
Yeah, because it's not necessary.
They just made a gemar din that this $30,000 field is given, the best made a gemar din based on the false witnesses. You give over the $30,000 field to the wife because he just divorced and the other. Then when Mazin then turns out it's not true, he gets back the field. How much is the field worth?
Why did he pay the cash?
He's not paying cash. Let's say he gave her a niksuba.
Assuming he has to give a field, I gave him cash. I gave him $30,000 cash. Now I'm finally done.
It's going to be the same din. It's easier to understand if you work with a field. But it's going to be the same din. So the Gemara says, imagine if you have a field. So he gave up. Bez made a Gemara din. You got to give up the $30,000 field. And if he wouldn't give over, if it's not true, so the $30,000 field is not worth $30,000 to him. No. How do you assess how much anything is worth? Let's say, how much is this Gemara worth? How much is this Gemara worth? Well, it's a second-hand Gemara. It's ripped over here and everything. How do you assess how much is worth? But it has very great sentimental value to me because it was donated by Mr. Gluck to the shul, and when we learned Sanhedrin, I was using this Gemara for many years, and I have and my grandfather before the Holocaust, my great grandfather, my family used this Gemara. It has a lot of value. But if you sell it in the market, how much would you get for it?
No.
Not too much. That's how much it's worth. The halacha says, how much is anything worth? How much can you get for it today in this city? How much can you get if you sell?
Not for the source to you.
Right. It doesn't matter how precious it is to me.
No sentimental.
Right. That's how the Nesivus writes in a few places. Shibu Yafchafotzim has always become a Kamahu Shabbalim Kavashu. So we took away, we made it, we're taking away the $30,000 field and giving it over to the wife And then we mazim the Eidim, give him back the field. Is the field really worth $30,000 for him? If he would want to sell it, would he get $30,000? No, no one's going to pay $30,000. They know that the field may be collected by the wife for the ksuba. Yeah. So you have to assess how much would the husband be able to get
for the field when he sells
for selling this field. That's how much the field is really worth to him.
For selling the field, he may not get the full amount.
No,
but
that's
to him,
right.
It's worth $30,000 because he can have all the payments after that.
No, but it's not worth $30,000. $30,000 field, if someone else who's single, if the guy would still be single, he got married already. If the guy would still be single and he has this field and he has no obligations in the world, then it would be worth $30,000. But a married guy who wrote in his ksuba, this is it, so for him it's talking not worth $30,000. It may turn out in the end that it will be in the event that she dies first.
Yeah,
and he gets it. But right now, Kama Hu Shabal in Kabashuk.
He can use Paris from it.
He
can develop it.
Right.
So
right.
He has his, if he sells it now.
So it's going to be worth close to 30. If someone else would have had it, it would have been worth $30,000.
Yeah.
So by him, it's worth a lot of money.
That's from doing.
Right. That's part of the Cheshbon. Mm. So the first Amora in the Gemara says, when it says in the Mishnah, you assess. How much one would get for selling the ksuba. It doesn't say who's selling. It doesn't say you're selling the rights to collect the ksuba, you're selling the rights to the karka, which is designated in the ksuba. So the first Amori says, no, Shaman Bidbal. And Ram Nosson Bar Roshia disagrees, says, no, Shaman Bisha. It doesn't say in the Mishnah how much the field is worth to the husband. The mafsid him, how much, kamahush, what are they mafsid? Let's say Agana feels the Gemara. Agana burns the Gemara. So he doesn't pay. Now if I want to replace it, the replacement value is a lot. I want to buy, I have this whole shas. I want to replace it. It's going to cost me $10 to $15 to replace the one value. But that's not, you don't assess how much the thing is worth by the replacement value. It's assessed according to the din. If I would sell this one value, how much would I get? Wouldn't get $15. I'd get maybe a dollar and a half, less, half a dollar. Who wants a second-hand gemara? So here also, the first amara says, you assess how much the field was worth. The second one says no. They made the husband pay the $30,000. The wife has, every wife, let's say a normal woman, has a standard ksuba. So if she would sell to someone else the right to collect the ksuba, so how much would she get?
She wouldn't
for
get $30,000.
Nowhere near $30,000. Wouldn't even get maybe
10%.
Okay.
Yeah.
There's a chance. There's a far out chance that after 60 years of marriage, the husband may die. There's a chance she may die first, in which case the kid gets nothing. In the event that the husband divorces her, or in the event that the husband dies first, then she's going to collect it. But she didn't collect it yet. So she's going to have to wait a while. Now they're still married together, it's going to take a while. So if a lekeach wants to buy from her, he's going to pay less than if he would buy the field from the husband. That's how Rashi explains over here. That's the Pashup Shat. Some other Rishonim say Fakir, that if you buy from her, you're going to pay more. But the Pashup Shat is like Rashi. If you buy from her, she doesn't have anything. Everything is just possibilities. Far out possibility. We don't know if anyone will get anything. So Rav Nosson Bar Roshia says, you assess how much the wife would be able to get if she would sell the ksuba, and then you take the $30,000 and you subtract that, and that's the hefset to the husband. Why? Because if the husband, just like the wife can sell the chances
to
buy a ksuba to someone else, she could have sold it to the husband also, if she would agree. She may not want to agree to sell it to the husband, because then if she sells the right to collect the ksuba to the husband, he already paid off. And then he can always decide to divorce her. He doesn't pay nothing because he already bought up a ksuba. So it turns out, in effect, that he's living with his wife without a ksuba. The Gemara said that's not permissible. You're not allowed to live with a wife without having to pay a ksuba, because it'll be kala b'ein of lo hitziya. Let's say a boy and a girl are so madly in love, the girl says, I'm meichel the whole ksuba, I don't need any ksuba. So the Gemara says, take nish. Now they're madly in love, they're going to treat each other nicely, but then later on, if the guy gets upset about his wife, it'll be very easy. He'll just divorce her, goodbye and good luck. He doesn't have to pay her a penny. So you want to discourage men from divorcing their wives, from rushing to divorcing their wives so quickly. So they say, if you want to divorce your wife, you got to pay through the nose. So if the husband is going to buy up the right to the ksuba, if the wife sells the right to the ksuba to some stranger, so So if the husband will divorce his wife, he's going to have to pay the $30,000 to that stranger. But if she, the same, let's say a $30,000 ksuba, she'll get, let's say for argument's sake, $1,000. $1,500, $2,000. How much is the gamble worth? $2,000. I don't know. I'm not so good. I wouldn't. I don't think I would. I'm
buy it at all.
I don't think I would pay so much money on this ksuba, unless they're really holding by getting divorced. Unless the husband is mamish holding by gesisa, or there's absolutely no shalom bayis, then I would buy it. Otherwise, a normal couple, why would I buy it then? Unless you have a lot of money. Okay. So how much are you going to pay? $1,000 for the possibility of maybe getting $30,000. It's a risky deal.
Does this have the Eidim's on?
So the shaila is, how much would the Eidim Sheker really mafsa the husband? So the husband would have been able to buy up the rights of the ksuba from the wife, for if she would sell it to someone else, she would sell it for $1,500, let's say. So she could sell it to the husband also for $1,500, which is parenthetically not right. If the husband buys up the rights to collect the ksuba, so $1,500, the same as anybody else. No. Then it comes out, Kala b'yena v'loitziya. If he'll divorce, he doesn't pay a penny, he's already all paid up. He already bribed her. He gave her 15. She wanted to buy a diamond ring. And he said, Genukta, you already have 10 diamond rings. How many rings she wants for her toes? So he doesn't want to buy her another diamond ring. So she says she has an asset, she has something. She's going to sell her ksuba. She's going to sell her ksuba to someone else to get $1,500 to buy another diamond ring to put on her toes. And the husband says, Meshugana, what are you selling it to someone else? Sell it to me. So he gives the $1,500, go buy yourself another diamond ring, do whatever you want. And now, in the event that he divorces her, he pays nothing because it's all paid up already. So the Gemara says that's not really right. So that's a problem over here. Since it's not really right that the husband should buy up the ksuba from the wife, so why should you make such a calculation that there's a possibility the wife should sell it to the husband? It's akasha, but that's how
so
we pass it.
It means that a certain value.
Market value.
It has a certain market value.
So the market value of her ksuba is, let's
this
say,
$1,500.
To a stranger.
To a stranger. So what dinami? If the husband would buy it, it would also be $1,500. So when the Eidim are trying to be mopsed him, what are they mopsed? A full $30,000?
No.
They're only mopsed him $30,000 minus $1,500. Because he could have bought up the ksuba for $1,500. So they're only, he could have bought up the ksuba $1,500. But now that the Eidim say, no brother, no chance to buy it up. You have to pay now, today, $30,000. He get that correct. No, I'm still married, and I wanted to buy up the ksuba. I would have wanted to buy the ksuba. Wasn't interested, but theoretically, he could have bought up the ksuba for $1,500, and then off the hook, he would never have to pay. So the hefset that they caused him is $30,000 minus $1,500. So the Gemara says that's how we pass like the second opinion. We pass like Amar Papa. We pass like Rab Nosson Bar Roshia Beisha, and then he throws in another word Ubiksu Basa. Basa does Beisha. Come, we understand. Okay, we understand. It doesn't mean Babal, it means Beisha.
Like
you subtract. You take the $30,000 minus $1,500, and that's how the hefset is. Okay, what is the next word, Big Subasa? What did he add on over there, Big Subasa? So
Not the Iker. It goes like the ksuba of this woman.
Oh, so you mean, let's say her ksuba is not $30,000, her ksuba is $150,000. Yeah. So it's going to be different. And it's not necessarily always going to be the same proportion.
Right.
Sometimes if it's a bigger amount of money, so maybe it'll be a larger proportion, a lesser proportion, whatever. So it all depends on the going rate. However, that's the posh pshat. That's how the Rif quotes a pshat from the going. The first pshat, the first thing the Rif says in the name of the going is not to be understood. The Ramban says, I don't know what he's talking about. The first pshat, the Rif quotes from the going is like this. The first opinion says Babal. The second opinion says Beisha means like this. The first one says you got to see how old is the husband, how sick is the husband, how miserable a husband is he, does he look like the kind of a guy who's going to divorce his wife or not. So you make the calculations looking at the husband. The second one says no, look at the wife, how old is the wife, how sick is the wife, and how miserable and how good a cook is the wife. So the Ramban says, what do you mean when you're looking how old is the husband? It means in contrast to the wife. He said the husband is 80 years old, but his wife is 99 years old. So what does it help? The husband is 80 years old, but Mustama, she's 99. Mustama, she's going to die before him. He say, how sick is the husband? But the wife may be holding back his tisa. What do you mean, how sick is the husband?
Whenever you
both.
Yeah.
So the Ramban says he doesn't. Ramban on the bottom of it says he doesn't really understand what the Gaon Shebarif is talking about. He says the first opinion says you focus on the husband to see how sick is he and how old is he, and the other one says you focus on the wife. You have to focus on both, and to see whether they're happy-go-lucky people. What does it help? He's happy-go-lucky. If she's a misery, if she's happy, but he's a miserable guy. So they will end up in a divorce. So that part of the Goyen, he doesn't understand. Yeah. So what is it? So how can you have a machlokes whether bebal or beisha? So you got to say like Rashi.
Yeah.
Rashi gave the whole complicated shot. You got to say like Rashi. But then Rashi's the punchline, the way Rashi learns beisha, big subasa, the last word, big subasa. So the Ramban is not happy with Rashi. He likes the Goyen Shebarif on the last word. Yeah. Rashi says like this, beisha, big subasa. Where's the Rashi? You have the last Rashi on the daf. I have it in bold letters. Amar Apapa, Be'isha, Shaman, Kirab Nasan. $30,000 minus $1,500. Okay. Ubik Subasa, what does that mean? Lo Yishalma Lo Eloha Odef, Bik Subasa, Aladarim Halalu, Avaloi Nichsim Alub Shalot. There are three parts in the Ksuba, we said. There's the Ike Ksuba, that's very little. $250, L'chola Yesa, maximum. That's the Masayim Zuz. And then you have Tosefes Ksuba's Meir Zekukin. There's a German coin Zuzes from the Gemara, from the Tanakh. And the Meir Zekukin Kesef Tzorif is the Tosefes Ksuba, and the other Meir Zekukin Kesef Tzorif is the Nedunya. So Rashi, so there are three parts. So you should, and all three parts, all Sachakol, adds up, let's say, to $30,000. So Rashi says, nope. They don't have to pay for the Nichsei. They don't have to pay for Nichsei Malug. Oh, we didn't even talk about Nichsei Malug. That's another thing. Nichsei Malug is not Chazak. So Rashi says they don't have to pay for that. Why? Because the next line of Rashi, the Yicholim Laimar, Eim Shalmim the Nichsei Malug. Why? The Yicholim Laimar, Ano Lo Heyadno Al Alak Suba. We didn't know anything about that. It says in the Chumash Rasisim, like Hashem Zalman Lasis Liyachid, he make him pay what he wanted to be mopsed the other one. So what they wanted to be mopsed, well, everybody knows when you get divorced, you got to pay ksuba. You don't necessarily have to know how much it is, but everybody knows the whatever it says in the document. That's what I don't necessarily have to know how much it says. Maybe this woman's ksuba is five times as much as the other woman's ksuba. But whatever it says, that's what I'm giving Eidus Sheker, and if they'll be mazim me, I'm an askein on the yosef. That's what I know. I'm going to have to pay that. But the nichsim look, whatever other things, whatever I didn't know, that's not kasha zamam. I didn't know about that. That's how Rashi learns. So the Ramban is very upset about the Rashi. He says, so why not say the same for the Ike Ksuban, Tatsefes Ksuban, for the Nedunya also? How do you know whether she got married to this husband for the first time or whether it was her second marriage? If it's her second marriage, it's a smaller amount. First marriage is a Masayim Zuz. Second marriage is only Meyo Zuz.
But and you don't know. She can give more as much as she wants. Maybe you give more.
Yeah, we have a minik from the days of the Maril. We have a standard fixed amount. In Eretz Yisrael and the Rabbanot, they don't make a fixed amount because they really collect what it says in the Ksuba. But yes, the government makes it pay alimony, so the alimony is more than the Ksuba, so you throw out the Ksuba. Everything is covered already.
Yeah, but here, the woman is in kibbutz. The woman is in kibbutz with her.
She pays, she bribed the Eidus Sheker to
and
give testimony.
Knows what's in the
yeah, but the Eidus is enemy to say, we don't know.
But she's telling the Eidus.
She doesn't tell the Eidus necessarily what's in Ksuba.
If she is telling the Eidus.
Someone who does know the Nisra,
yeah, but the wife knows. They specified so that you make him pay through the nose. So the Ramban asked, but if Rashi is right, that big subasa means you don't make him pay for the nichsim aluk, that we didn't even discuss nichsim aluk. You don't make him pay because maybe lo yodain, or maybe they didn't know, and they can tell they didn't know. So the Ramban tainis, so can they tainin? We didn't know on everything. We didn't know whether she was, unless they said. They can say, we didn't know that she got married to him for the first marriage. Maybe it was the second marriage. Maybe it was like, we didn't know there was so much tosefes. We didn't know there was so much nedunya. So that's ridiculous, the Ramban says. Whatever is included in their Haggadah Seder, you make him pay. See, he's not happy about that, about that pshat in Rashi. So that's why the Goyen Shebarif has a different pshat. The Goyen Shebarif says what you said. Depending on how much it says in the Ksuba, that's how you're going to determine the calculation, how much she's going to get if she'll sell. If the ksuba is $30,000, she'll probably get $1,500. But if the ksuba is, let's say, $60,000, they just multiply by two, because the ksuba is twice as big as a normal ksuba, so the amount that you get is twice as much. So the Gaon Shebrief says, no, maybe you get more than twice as much, maybe you get less than twice as much. It all depends on the market.
Right,
it all depends. So that's what the Gemara says. The Isha, Ubik Subas, it depends on her particular ksuba. How much is it? That's how you have to calculate to see how much would people be prepared to pay.
Sometimes genetic ksuba, it is an individual ksuba.
Yeah.
Okay. In each case, you have to judge. But that's the premise of these both Mishnais. The both Mishnais say the same thing, and that's what the Gemara spells out in the next stuff. A very fascinating din. That if we were mazim the Eidim and the Mamish gave Eid a Sheker, they were not there. They were not there that they should know. But it comes out that he really did owe that amount of money. The Nidon, the man against whom they testified falsely, really did owe that amount of money. So then they don't pay Kasha Zamam. So what do you do with part of it he did owe, part of it he didn't owe? So the Mishnais make the calculation. So now the Gemara is going to comment on the next Mishnah. Next Mishnah said, we already learned the Mishnah. The witnesses testified falsely that the fellow owes $100,000 payable in 30 days. And he's screaming, yes, I admit that I owe $100,000, but not payable in 30 days. I have 10 years to go. So it's a big difference in money. So we're mazim the Eidim, and we make him pay right away. Then it comes, we made a gmardin.
And
he has to pay right away. Then we're mazim the Eidim. Turns out that it was a sheker. But he did have to pay $100,000, but payable in 10 years. So you have to calculate how much is that worth. How much is that differential worth? So the Gemara raises a question. What's the din every seventh year is Shemitah?
Yeah.
And Shemitah applies not only Bizman Beis HaMikdash
Kayim,
even after the Churban Beis HaMikdash. It could be it's only Midirabbanon. Most of the Poskim hold Shemitah Bizman is only the Rabbanon. Most hold that Shemitah was only the Rabbanon Bizman Bayi Sheni also. Most assume, because the psukim at the beginning of Parshas Behar, it says every seventh year is Shemitah, and after 49 years you make Yovel. So that's a separate paragraph. It says one paragraph every seventh year is Shemitah, and these are laws of Shemitah. Then a new paragraph says, and every 50th year is Yovel. So the question is, do you read it quickly or slowly? Do you read it all together? Every 50th year is Yovel, then every seventh year is Shemitah. If you know you're going to lead up to Yovel, then you have Shemitah. What if I know in advance? There won't be a Yovel. I know in advance there's a condition that's not met that there won't be a Yovel. What condition is not met? Pasuk says, the Pasuk on the Liberty Bell. It says, across from Drab Ba'aretz L'chol Yeshveh. Now should proclaim liberty throughout the land and to all its inhabitants. The Liberty Bell was originally commissioned to be made by the Jews of Pennsylvania. I'm from Pennsylvania. So it's gonna represent the state of Pennsylvania. And they had it manufactured in Europe, then it was brought over to America, and then the 13 colonies decided that it will represent the freedom of the whole United States of America. So they, the Jews, wanted that pasuk to be inscribed on the Liberty Bell. Across from Dror Ba'aretz, L'chol Yeshveh, the pasuk goes on freeing an Eved Ivri. Eved Kenani is L'olam HaMtavot, he never goes free unless he free him. But the Eved Ivri goes free either B'sheish or B'yovel, whichever comes first. If 6 years are up before Yovel, goes free B'sheish. And if the Yovel comes before the 6 years are up, then it goes through the Yovel. Mm-hmm. So that pasuk goes on Yovel. It says, "Across from Dror Ba'aretz lechol Yoshveha." What does that mean? So the Gemara understands that pasuk, around the end of Erechin, understands that pasuk is a condition in the observance of Yovel, that you only have the mitzvah of Yovel bisman shekol Yoshveha aleh. All the people who are supposed to be living in Eretz Yisrael are living there. Who are the people who are supposed to be living in Eretz Yisrael? Klal Yisrael is supposed to be living in Eretz Yisrael. So his mom by Sheni, there was hardly anybody there. It says in the Pesukim that Ezra and Nehemiah came back via Shnia with 45,000 or 50,000 people. There was nobody there. And there were the overwhelming majority of the world Jewish population did not go back. So therefore, there was no Yovel deraisa for sure. From the Mishnais, it would appear that Yovel was noig mid the Rabbanan, but Minatara Yovel was not noig bizman by Sheni. So now there was a machlokes hatanoim. Was shmita yovel? Was shmita noig min haTorah? Do you say that that condition that's necessary for yovel is also necessary for shmita? Because you read the beginning of Parshas Bahar quickly together. Every seventh year is shmita, and then after seven times shmita, you have yovel. If you're going to have, kol yashvei alel. But if you know in advance that you don't have the majority of the world Jewish population, you know you're not going to lead up to a yovel, then you don't even have to observe Shemitah in the first place. So Shemitah b'zman hazeh is still, it's soon going to be changing. So far, how many, over 5 million Jews living in Eretz Yisrael. Over 5 million Jews. In another couple of years, it'll be the majority of the world Jewish population. We'll have to see. So then there won't be any Het HaMechira. The whole Het HaMechira is on the assumption that Shemitah is only with the Rabbana. Why Shemitah with the Rabbana? Because you know in advance it's not going to lead up to Yovel. Why not? Because you know you don't have Kol Yashveh Halev. So that was a Machlekes HaTanoim. That's in the Sifro on Parshas Bahar. That's a Machlekes Rebbe and the Chacham, Rebbe Yudah Nasi and the other Tanoim. Do you only observe Shemitah and Atar if you know it's going to lead up to Yovel because you have Kol Yashveh Halev, or even not? So that's what the Ruba of the Rishayim say, that Shemitah b'zman hazeh is only the Rabbanon. That's what the whole Het HaMechira is based on. That since it's only the Rabbanon, if you sell the land to a Nachri, so there are those who hold that some of the laws of Shemitah don't apply. There are some who hold, and not everybody holds from that. But this is the accepted opinion, that Shemitah b'zman hazeh is only the Rabbanon. So what are the laws of Shemitah? So the main laws of Shemitah are for the farmers who live in Eretz Yisrael, that they're not allowed to do the Avodah Sakark. Then there's another din in Shemitah, Shmita's Tzofen. When Shmita year comes to a close, Shviz Mishameta is Besofa. This past Rosh Hashanah was the end of the Shmita. Tavshin Samach Aleph was the Shmita year. So Rosh Hashanah Tavshin Samach Beis was the end of Shnas HaShmita. So anyone who owed a halvor, a lover who owed a halvor to the Malveh, it says he doesn't have to pay back unless the Malveh makes a Pruzbal. We're going to have to discuss Pruzbal because it comes in on Gimel Amud Beis. Rashi and Tosfos in the Gemara, how do you read the Gemara? We'll have to work on that. But if no one made any provable, if you didn't do anything, so then the din says that the lovid doesn't have to pay the money back to the mother. So now the Gemara is asking Akasha. The Mishnah says that if I lend you money and you have to pay back in 30 days...
No Shemitah.
Huh? If you have to pay back in 30 days, so then the money that you have is not that valuable. You can use it for 30 days. I lend you money, you can have it for 10 years. That's givaldic. So then the loiva, it's worth much more.
But he may lose.
So the Gemara says, no, but the Gemara said, wait a minute. What do you mean it's worth much more? It's worth, he doesn't have to pay back at all. He doesn't have to pay back the malva anything. What happened to Shemitah? So from the Mishnah you get the impression, it says, what's the difference between borrowing $100,000 for 30 days and borrowing $100,000 for 10 years? Borrow for 10 years, you don't pay back a penny, you don't pay back anything. So you see, Shemitah, so you see from the Mishnah. So that's the Machlokes in the Gemara. That's the Tulashinus. So from the Mishnah here, it's pretty obvious that if you lend the money for 10 years, he does have to pay back the money ultimately at the end of 10 years. So the Gemara is going to raise the issue. What happened to Shemitah? Why does the Leiva have to pay anything? Right, so that's what the Gemara says. Maybe he gave him a mashkin. Right? Easy solution. Right? That's what the Gemara is going to say. So that's the Machlokes.
Also could be made a prizbul.
Also made a prizbul. So those are the two suggestions that the Gemara is going to have. Right. Yeah. Okay. We'll have to
see.
We'll have to learn the Gemara.
For Shmita, do you say that you don't have to pay back, or just that the Malva can't ask for the money, but it doesn't mean
he's resident of the list? Yeah,
he really does have to pay back. Right, the Mishnah says if the loiva really does have to go pay on his own. The loiva is supposed to come on his own and pay. And when the loiva gives the money to the malva, the malva is supposed to, it says, v'zed divar hashmita, v'zed dibur hashmita. So it's a mitzvah that the malva should say, mishamitani. But then there's a mitzvah that the loiva should say, aval pichay. He should say, aval pichay, because he really should pay back the money. That's how the Mishnah says. In Shvi is that one of the loiva who pays back the money, even after Shemitah came to a close, It's Ruach HaChamim Deichem, and he's doing the correct thing. That's what you really should do. It is a chiyuv
deraita.
Yeah, he really is supposed to pay back. In fact, the Sama Rishonim will say the Ozarua has such an opinion. The Ozarua writes on Gittin. The Ozarua goes on the Mesifus on Gittin. The Sugya Pruzbal, he writes that if the Loive doesn't come to volunteer, the Malva can get Bezin to force the Loive to pay. And then when the Loive pays and the Malva says, thank you very much, you're not supposed to say thank you very much. The Malva is supposed to be Mishamitan. So what if he doesn't want to say Mishamitan? He walks off with the money. So the Bezdin will, the Loive can get Bezdin to force him. Everybody has to do their, it's like a like a play. We can force, a pantomime. We can force the Loive to pay. And then if the Malva wants to pocket it, no, we'll force the Malva to say Mishamitani. And he gives it back. And then the Malva says, no, you're the next kind of script. And he says, no, the Loive wants to walk away with the money. So the Malva will get the Bezin to force the Loive to say, Afopichain, and to give him back the money. So bottom line, what it means is, the way the Urza Ruth is, bottom line, what it means is, he really owes the money. The Loive really owes the money. But it's an Issa Loigos. It's an Issa on the part of the Malva to chepe the Loive. He's not allowed to chepe him. But he really owes the money. And when he pays back the money, he's paying the money that he really owes. It's just, we don't want the Malva to violate the Issa of Negisa. He's not allowed to chep, he's not allowed to ask for the money.
The same Issa as if somebody owes you money and they don't have, and you were asking for the money back. No?
Let's see a lucky Noisha.
Yeah.
He owes me the money, but I'm not allowed to ask for it, because I know he doesn't have, so what am I chepping him? Right. So it's such a similar thing. Okay. Maybe we'll save this for next week. In Parshas Emor, this week is Parshas Emor, we have all of the dinim of the Yomim Tovim. So the Chumash tells us about the Yontif of Pesach and the Yontif of Shavuos. And the Yontif of Pesach, we bring a Minchas HaOmer. The Minchas HaOmer is from barley, and it's supposed to be matzah, not allowed to be chametz. And then 7 weeks later, we bring Shtei Alechem. Shtei Alechem is from chitim. That's already wheat. Barley is Michael Behema usually. Behemas eat barley. And then on Shavuos, you bring the carbon of the Shtei Alechem, is chitim, is wheat. And that's supposed to be Davke Chometz. Normally, carbonas are only matzah, and that carbon has to be Davke Chometz. So, Rabbi Levi Yitzchak Berditcheva writes in the Kedushas Levi, and other Sfarim write as well, that the two Yom Tovim really represent two different things. Pesach is the Yontov of Emunah. The matzah is called Mechle de Behemnusa, and this is the Meichel of Emunah. Because the whole Esamakis and the whole Yitzhak Mitzrayim was V'yidaitim Ka'ani Hashem. It says, L'man Revos Mopsa Be'eretz Mitzrayim, L'man Tzapa Be'ozim Bincha Be'ez Bincha Eis, Hashem Salatim in Mitzrayim, V'yidaitim Ka'ani Hashem, V'yidaitim Ka'ani Hashem. The whole taklis of the Esamakis was that we should have Emunah. So the Yontov HaPesach is supposed to be a Yontov of Emunah. Emunah, there isn't so much to philosophize about. Emunah is supposed to be Emunah, Pshuto, like a behemoth, the Psukim, the Balatani quote, Psukim in Tehillim. The Dovra Melech says, I'm like a behemoth in my Emunah, Legabi Der Bosham. Not stupid, but he doesn't philosophize, he doesn't hakir them. So that's why it's unsophisticated. Matzah. Matzah means very bland, nothing special, nothing fancy. Matzah. There's an expression, the Rambam always uses the word expression, or matzah. If you have hide that wasn't treated chemically to convert it into parchment, that's called or matzah. It's not that if you treat it that you call it or chometz, that's or ma'ubad. That's treated chemically is ma'ubad, and it's converted into parchment. But if it's plain, unsophisticated, simple, in its original state, that's called or matzah in the Lashon Rambam. It's a Lashon HaGemara in the Gemara in Shabbos. So that's on Pesach. Pesach is the Yontov HaMunah. So it's very unsophisticated, very flat, very bland, nothing to philosophize. But Shavuos is the Yontov of Kabbalah HaTorah. So we're supposed to celebrate the fact that Rabbi Shalom gave us the Torah. And what does he want us to do with the Torah? Just to memorize the dinim? No, he wants us to use our sechel. It should be sophisticated. We should make chametz out of it. He's supposed to, the Shtei Alechem is supposed to be chametz. He's supposed to be Meichel Adam. What's the whole uniqueness of a human being as opposed to a behemoth? He has sechel, the behemoth hat nishkin sechel. When it comes to emunah, David HaMelech says, behemoth ani itoch. I'm like a behemoth, having emunah very bland, very emunah pshuta, very simple, as opposed to limud HaTorah. The Ribbono Shel Olam wants us to break our heads and to try to figure out what's behind all the dinim and what are the rules and what are the exceptions to the rules, to work hard, to understand. You're supposed to observe mitzvahs, but to learn Torah. There's no conflict. There's no conflict in learning Torah and using the mind to try to understand Torah. Is not a pegiya, is not a pegima in the fact that we believe it's min hashamayim, but the Ribbono Shel Olam wants us to use our seichel. We have every year we have a representative from Kiryat Malachi speak to us about the yeshivas, about the different institutions that they have there. Shalom aleichem.
Ik wil echt niet materieel zijn, maar daarvan is er eigenlijk een paar versen of zo.